This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And oh boy, there's a lot of big books that came out this week, so let's get into it.
Everybody's fighting this week.
Come on.
Everyone's fighting.
Everybody is DC fighting, and DC KO number 4 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Joshua Williamson, art by Javier Fernandez and Zermanico. Spoiler warning for this whole stack, everything that we're going to be talking about, because we're going to get into it as big stuff goes down in this issue of DC KO, as the remaining heroes and villains, who, to run through it, are Superman, Wonder Woman, Joker, and Lex Luthor, face down the absolute universe trinity. That's just the beginning of the twists and turns that happen in this issue.
Yeah.
As Joker changes sides, Batman returns, and then we get a King Omega by the end here. But wait, that's not all. There's more to come at the end at an entire other issue. Justin, you seem like you're ready to say something here.
I have so many things to say. What? First off,
wait,
I feel
why do you get to go first? This was on my fucking list, bro. That's bullshit.
Yeah, anybody can put a list in. What do you Here's like?
Oh, I like this. I'm going to spoil something about this podcast. All three of us get to talk.
All right. What if we changed it and only two did?
Would
that,
title?
Would that change the dynamic?
Two of us already talked about this book, so the third cannot.
You're cut. Who would win? We'll never know. Pete, you know what? I'm going to take a KO here and let you talk about this.
No. Please. You started.
Really good. I'm glad we spent that moment. A moment we will never get back, and neither will the listeners. The thing about this, I have so many things to say, because number one, reading this issue, I was like, God, why did I ever fill out our dumb bracket the way that I did? Because I was like, of course, is the way it was going to end. So I was like, three months ago, me felt very stupid. Secondly, I'm like, do I like the absolute Trinity more than I like the main Trinity?
Yes.
Do I? Is that me now?
Yes.
Because I'll tell you what, when they were evil in this, I was like, hey. Yeah. No.
No.
No, no.
Yeah.
And then when they came back, I was like, yes, those are the ones I like. And I was like, what a litmus test for me as a reader that like I might like these absolute characters more.
Yeah. No question.
Pete, and now over to you.
Thanks. I lost my shit. I had a real oh shit moment during this when Batman showed up and then did that bang. I fell out. That was so cool. I was like, oh my God, that is awesome. I jumped up out of my seat. It was such a badass moment. Yeah, I just love the swings that are happening, the twists and turns. This is so much fun. The Batman fight was so awesome.
How do you like the phrase, I don't cheat, I'm Batman?
Hey, you know, I'm fine with
it. Can we say that in casual conversation, like at work?
Yeah.
Here's my one big criticism of the issue. I wanted more Batman versus absolute Batman. Because seeing tiny little Batman face off against hulking beast Batman, I was like, let's go. And then it was only one or two paddles, and that was a little bit of a bummer. But otherwise, the fights were very fun. They were very big. What I am appreciating about this book is it keeps pulling the rug out and over and over again, where you're like, this is what's going to happen. And it's like, no, it's not. And then you're like, no, okay, this is what's going to happen. It's like, no, it's not. Yeah. So
I'll be fine standing on this rug.
So I'm very curious at this point to see how we end up in the final issue and whether this feels like a cohesive, complete story, because there have been so many rug pulls throughout the four issues so far. I think the place we end up in is interesting. To talk about like the ending a little bit, because this is another thing that I thought was an interesting choice that I don't know that we necessarily needed, but maybe we did need for the next issue, is after we have a crowned King Omega and a setup for a big fight for the next issue, we flash back in time and find out how Darkseid corrupted Booster Gold and how Darkseid took the Absolute Universe Trinity. And the answers to both of those questions is, well, he did it. So there's, we don't learn much more, I don't think, about circumstances, and that takes up a bunch of the page count at the end there.
I agree with that. I found the back bit to be like sort of like, well, we must tell this part of the story. And it was sort of like Darkseid being like, you know what I want to do? Kick everybody's ass. And I was like, yeah, I know.
I'm familiar, bro.
The only part that may be interesting is the Saturn girl, from the sort of corrupted Legion Saturn girl of it. And so, like, and I do like the Evil Legion aspect of the story, and maybe that will come back eventually. So, like, I agree with you. I was surprised by that back bit. Lex Luthor being the power player here, I feel like that's cool, but also we have truly our original Trinity in both main continuity and Absolute just being like, what's up? Right off camera.
Yeah.
So, like, well, no, that's exciting.
All killed. Everybody else is done except for Lex Luthor versus Darkseid at the end there. But here's the thing.
Oh, I know. That's the real thing that happened. And that's the end of that story.
Yeah, that's the end of it. It's all
over. Well, here I'll throw out a theory, because the other thing, and this is a personal thing, I don't have a problem with how they had this story wise, but the last panel of the issue is Saturn Girl being like, well, and I saw it, the past, present, and future, it's all Darkseid, it's all done, he has won, except for one little light there. Skinny Doomsday for the future, the time trapper with his little chains that fly around it. I'm like, oh, I don't like that guy. And that's annoying. Doomsday.
Well, I like it. I like the move. I did think the pose is very funny of, like, Skinny Doomsday being like, me. Yeah. You're talking about me. Peek-a-boo. I was like, what is this little peekaboo?
Yeah.
But so that I'm on board for that. But all I do want to say is Absolute Wonder Woman, regular Batman, Absolute Superman, Absolute Batman, Superman, regular Wonder Woman.
Wow, interesting ranking there. I want to get back talking about the Batman fight, because it was so good. I even love the part where it was like, you like the new bat symbol? And he was like, it's growing on me. I was like, God damn it. This is just such a blast. I don't want to leave
again, I agree with you. It's just I wanted more. And I think that's a sign of a good, like, ooh, these are little tastes of these things. But we know this is the second act of a three-part story. There is more to come. There's going to be more interactions.
Even the bringing
Well, hold on. But it felt like, this is like, ooh, here it comes, Absolute Universe versus the DC Universe. But I felt them holding back a little bit. I think, like, this is, they have a bunch of cool things in a notebook that they're going to do in about a year from now.
Yeah, it's so funny. You're like, yeah, I don't know if this story's going to come together. And I'm like, this part of the story was everybody fucking fights.
No.
Like,
what I'm
saying, they did that, Alex. They did it.
What I'm saying is there is more to it and more cool moments, I'm sure, but they're going to do a more full throttle thing down the road. The other thing that I wanted to throw out there about the time trapper thing that I wanted to mention, this is pure theory for the last issue, but I think what they're saving there is either Doomsday comes back to being Doomsday and it's Doomsday versus Darkseid, or Doomsday, Darkseid, and Lex Luthor all taking each other on. Whatever it is, you get all of Superman's biggest baddies of all time in one place, and I do think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Also, speaking of fun, it was cool how they brought the brackets back. I thought that was a fun panel. So,
speaking of which, we got to bring our brackets back and see how we're doing. Let's see how close we're coming so far.
You guys want to get a look at three losers?
All right, here we go. I am going to bring this up. Okay, so what do we got here? This is Pete's bracket. Going down to the final four, you had Superman, Supergirl, Wonder Woman, and Damian Wayne. Superman, and your final two is Superman and Wonder Woman. And we actually have Lex Luthor versus Darkseid. So I'm sorry, you're not. You didn't do it.
No one. What are we doing? What is this exercise?
Well, we gotta see.
You're really rubbing all of our collective noses in this.
All right, here we go. I believe this was.
This is mine.
This is yours. Yeah. Your final four was Captain Atom, Supergirl, Wonder Woman, and Red Hood. And you had the final two being Supergirl and Wonder Woman. Again, it's Lex Luthor and Darkseid. I really think you should have figured that out.
Let's see
how close I got to the end here. Okay, so I had Superman, Black Lightning, Wonder Woman, and Batman. And my final two was Superman and Wonder Woman. I didn't come close at all either, I guess.
Wow.
Huh.
How did we lose this fictionalized story gambling competition? I would throw out one more thing, though. I think I was thinking that they were going to highlight some non-Trinity characters here, and that was wrong.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be wrong. Because I feel like the post-KO is about highlighting non-Trinity characters, and
we'll see.
That was incorrect. No, it is. That is.
We'll see.
They've announced it.
Yeah. We'll see. All right. Why don't we move to a big ending? Ultimate X-Men number 24 from Marvel by Peach Momoko in this final issue. Boy, there's a lot of stuff going on as everybody searches for Armor, who has disappeared. They track down a new mutant who is giving people trigger warning here, suicide pills so that they can die by suicide. If they don't like being a mutant anymore. And yeah, there you go.
Wait, so as we said in the previous comic, whoever highlighted this in the live show talks about it. So Alex, you just describe this issue. Give us the...
Sure,
give us
here's the thing. I do want to just to talk about what has been happening all along with Ultimate X-Men. I think we have all agreed that we love Peach Momoko's art, occasionally appreciated the story, but mostly been very confused by it. There is no way in the world this was supposed to be the final issue of Ultimate X-Men. There is no planet where that actually was the plan here with this story, because
there's so much new stuff introduced in this issue.
So much new stuff. So much about the suicide pills, which I didn't love, to be honest with you. I found that very uncomfortable. And there's a way of dealing with that, particularly because the thing that I think laudably Peach Momoko has brought into Ultimate X-Men is bringing it back to teen rebellion and outsider nature. That's great. So that's something to deal with. But it's not the sort of thing that you could throw into the last issue and not resolve in any way. So I don't know what's going on there, but still looks good.
I agree. It does look good. But yes, I found this. I was just shocked by what was laid out here. Definitely not connected at all to the ultimate, the other stuff going on in the Ultimate Universe at all, which I thought it was going to go that way, given what some of the stuff that happened in the previous issue. And I like the idea that they were going after Armor. There's some stuff here, but it ends so abruptly. And I don't know. It's just a tough read, I thought.
It's worth it for the art alone. Peach Momoko's art, even though it's fucked up shit going on here, it's still just so beautiful. The facial expressions, the way they're communicating, it's not a lot of talking. It's just really leading with the art. So I agree with what has been said, but I'm still just having such a great time looking at it. So it's hard to... not enjoy it because it's just so goddamn beautiful.
Well, I mean, to talk about the greater thing here, and we're not done with absolutely everything at this point, but it makes me really worried in general about the Ultimate Universe and its legacy right now, because I'm never big on the endings are the only thing, right? But Ultimate Black Panther ended fine, but in a way where we talked about it exactly the same way, this is not a last issue. There's plenty more to tell. They're just sort of finishing it here and then going on. Same thing with Ultimate X-Men. It's introducing new things and not really finishing. People seem mixed about Ultimate Endgame right now. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate Wolverine. And is there another one that I'm forgetting?
No, I think that's it, except for when the Ultimates.
Oh, the Ultimates. That is the other one I'm forgetting. So, we'll see what happens with those. Hopefully, we could have more good at the end here than...
Well, they're much closer to the main storyline.
Yeah.
Those titles.
So, we'll see, though. I'm concerned, is I guess what I'd throw out there.
Oh.
but we'll see. All right, Transformers number 29 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, something that I don't think has ever happened in the history of Transformers before, Optimus Prime and Megatron fight, which is crazy. Dude, because mostly, like, they've been friends. They've hung out together.
Stop it, dude.
They love each other.
What's their beef? Can you walk us through their beef? Because I'm like, guys.
Yeah, when did that start?
Oh, my God. It started so many years ago.
Is it a mishap?
Off, cool cover.
Is it?
Yeah. This is a fun cover.
It's, by the way, for anybody listening on the audio podcast, it's a cover of Optimus Prime fighting Megatron.
That's right.
Yeah.
Something I love to see. I was having such a great time with this comic until the very end. The last panel really kind of was such a sour note that I kind of was upset. I was a little disappointed. I mean, Autobots are maybe about to finally win for the, you know, which is huge. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, this lady shows up and they're like, hey, stop fighting. And it's like, what? You can't just, we're in the middle of something here. It was really just an upsetting last panel sour note to end on. And I was scratching my head and couldn't believe what was happening.
It's weird to me that you're using sour note as a negative, because if Haribo made like little sour notes, you would eat those. Yep. You would eat those. Not you'd be like,
sure,
this is great.
I mean, you had me at Haribo.
Yeah, we could throw together almost any two words and say Haribo made them and P would eat it.
Yeah.
So it's true. Like,
it's very true.
Raccoon shit. Haribo raccoon shit.
Oh man,
yo! You think it's you think it's a joke? Pete would eat that if that was in a fun box.
Yeah, yeah. As long as it's really gummy and
if it was one of the pouches gummy. In a fun dip, he'd eat gummy. That. He'd eat that raccoon shit. He'd take his little wand and be like, "Guys, you got to try his raccoon shit."
In all seriousness, I do enjoy myself an Optimus Prime Megatron fight, but this issue was a little too robot faced for me. By which I mean, every once in a while, this book becomes like, let's just do panels that are just close-ups of all these robots' faces as they scream at each other. And I'm like, can we pull back? Can we see some of the action a little bit? Because I don't know who is who. I'm sorry.
I mean, and like, to going off of that, like, I did the art in this issue, like, I agree with you, but there are some great panels in here. But mm-hmm. I'm like, can we just let these guys not fight for a second so some other stuff can happen? Coming across the end of the Danny Warren Johnson story in this, I'm like, let him chill a little bit. Let him have a home life.
Well, particularly because all the stuff with Miles Mayhem setting up Mask has been fun.
Yes.
Like, it's an interesting counterpoint to everything that's going on when all of the stuff with the Transformers is... Yeah, we have seen it before.
Well, the whole kind of take on Starscream and the betrayal and that kind of stuff, and then Soundwave coming back and like sacrificing himself, it was all great. This battle was awesome. It was epic feeling. It was just weird that it was like, hey, you two, knock it off, and that's how you're ending the issue. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, whose mom just came in and yelled at us for playing with toys?
They set her up a couple of issues back. She's from Cybertron. And
I know.
Now,
I'm very familiar with her.
She hates Earth. Okay. She hates Earth.
Oh, but you don't like her because she's a lady. Is that what you're getting at?
No, I'm just saying it's...
And the idea of a woman in charge.
Oh, my God.
You don't have a problem with it. You just haven't voted for it in the past couple of elections.
Oh, my God. That's not true at all. And okay. How dare you?
I have the voting records right here, Pete. I can bring them up.
Bring them up, asshole.
Bring
then
them
you,
up.
You wouldn't, if you actually had them in front of you, you wouldn't say those things because it's a lie.
I don't know. I'm trying, but I can't get the software to work.
My point being, like, there's this huge battle raging on. I it was just so cool. We're maybe going to finally win. And then it was like, hey, stop this. We have to talk. And I was like, what the fuck? It was just such a swerve, left turn. So we were building all this action, and then all of a sudden it means nothing?
And, you know, I feel like Alex was bullying you, Pete, so I want to say something just true about you that I think will make the audience understand you more. The phrase, Constructicons form Devastator, is what you say every morning when you put your clothes on.
That's right. That is true. It's facts.
You stand nude over your laid-out outfit.
Yep.
And you say Form Devastator.
That's correct.
And they do. They listen to you.
That's the fun part is it actually works. That's how I get dressed.
It works.
All right. Next up, Absolute Wonder Woman Annual 2026 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Mattia De Ulis. Sorry, this is following up on the plot point. Way back in, I want to say like the sixth issue of the main series, something like that.
I thought
that,
you were going to say the 60s.
Where Wonder Woman took the form of Medusa and had the thoughts and feelings and memories of Medusa for a little while. She has been very haunted by that and so prays to Athena to try to help Medusa in some way and sort of suss out what the myth is and what the reality is. Pete, you're pumping your fist, so let's go to Justin first. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
All right. Great. I mean, this is an epic cover. I mean, just wow, what an issue. I love this so much. This is such a great example of a perfect Wonder Woman story. Love the last panel. Love the art. I laughed at the, you know, the Batman without powers line. I cried at the last line. This is just so smart. And well done, and such a great team, and such a great way to consider Medusa and to look at Medusa. We have heard so many tales in different ways, but this is just, it feels so good, and it just feels so Wonder Woman, and I was just so moved by this. This is just epic on so many levels. I love this comic.
I feel like we all got into reading comics because we like heroes. We like any character who is willing to be pure of heart, open to the world, and doing the right thing. And there is no better comic, no better character than Absolute Wonder Woman showing that off right now. It is unbelievable how she's been constructed to be just maximal good. That's why, like, I don't know, she's just the best. And in this story, we get someone who is, like, fighting hard, great action. The art is so good and, like, really taking advantage of the extra pages you get in an annual to, like, just let each panel be big and breathe and be mythological, like Wonder Woman's talking about in here. Like, it's your mythology, it's my history. I thought it was just a cool idea. This comic just has everything slotted just right, and it's always good. She's the best hero.
Yeah, this is a absolutely fantastic issue. I will just give a shout-out. I'm going to bangle his name again, but Mattia De Ulis, who worked with Kelly Thompson on The Cull, which is another fantastic series you should read if you haven't checked it out. But just gorgeous art throughout, gorgeous creature designs. You know, one thing that I was thinking about while I was reading this is I knock comics a lot for having just color washes as their backgrounds. Like they're doing it. And I understand, like, it's a speed thing. There's a lot of pages.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't look great when you're like, here is five pages of Deadpool on pink. And I'm like, where is he? I don't understand. But here, you're not getting that because you're getting Wonder Woman in this foggy limbo for most of the time, but it's gorgeous because the colors and the shading are gorgeous and you understand the place she is in is this in-between place. So I'm just really struck by, like, there is a difference between this is a solid color and this is something that we are creating that is a misty limbo nowhere space. And that's what comes through in the art here. And it just shows a really great artist versus a rush job, you know? Yeah.
Yes. Nothing about this feels rushed.
It's great.
I want to, like, savor. I want to eat every page like a bit of fun.
Yeah, I want, like, raccoon every shit, you know? Panel,
I want,
like,
to eat
tattooed.
This, like, some of the finest raccoon shit at the most at a Michelin star restaurant.
Right, here, Pete? I thought we were, you know, like, sharing a moment and then you ruin it, you know?
We're sharing a moment and I ruined it. Both are true. Pete, both are always true.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
And this is a great setup for somebody who shares a moment and also ruins it. Star Wars Jar Jar, number one from Marvel, written by Ahmed Best and Mark Guggenheim. Art by Kieran McCaughan and Laura Braga. And in case you missed it, yes, that is Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar, co-writing this comic. And not only is Jar Jar in it, but he meets Jedi Kelleran Beck, who is the character that Ahmed Best plays in live action on the Disney Plus shows. So, in fact, it is Ahmed Best meeting Ahmed Best and teaming up to save the day in this issue in a story that takes place before something.
Okay. We're listening. No,
it's after Attack of the Clones, before Revenge of the Sith. That's where it's at.
Really good.
Anyway, Pete seems to want to die here, so I'll say something positive about this. I think, like, I love that there has been a retaking and re-owning of Ahmed Best in culture. Like,
yeah.
He's been very open about the fact that he was bullied to the point of I'll say this very kindly, like, not feeling good about himself and perhaps taking some action because of that.
Yes.
And the fact that, like, he's come back, he's hosted, I think there was, like, this Secrets of the Temple-style Jedi competition show he hosted. He got to play Kelleran Beck in live action. And, like, this is a silly Jar Jar book, and it's Jar Jar and his character teaming up and going on an adventure, and I think it's really nice and fun that he got to do it. It's clearly for him, but that's great.
Yeah.
He's been through a lot.
Yeah, and I agree, like, you know, I like telling stories at this part. Jar Jar was such a big character for the prequel, so, like, makes total sense. I just feel like, and we could do this, let's just retcon the way he talks.
Yep.
Can we just change that?
Yeah.
Because literally no one is like, perfect. I love it.
Yeah. More muy muy. Misa yeah. Bamba.
Don't.
And it's even listening to it in when you're watching the prequels, annoying but tolerable. Reading it, I want to poke my eyes out. Because it's so, I'm like, stop doing it that way, right? The words that we're saying here. And you hear his voice when you read it. So otherwise, like, I agree. Like, this is nice. And, like, you know, we're telling us, and there's this whole story here about the Palpatine scene. I was like, ooh, I would have never expected to see this scene. And there was a good little scene there between Jar Jar and Palpatine, where Jar Jar's, like, working the system against the greatest villain of the Skywalker trilogy of
saga,
trilogies.
The saga. Yeah. I'll say, not to, I'm sure Pete was going to say this in a second, and I sincerely mean this, cool cover. It is a very funny cover with three Jar Jars on it, like a classic, like, Three Wolves shirt or something like that. And I don't know.
That's funny.
I thought that was very funny. I kind of actually wish the rest of the issue was cheeky and ridiculous like that, rather than being like, no, we're doing a real adventure where Jar Jar's a real hero. And there's jokes in there throughout, but I wish it was a little more ridiculous and anarchic. That's all.
Have you ever seen the videos that were released that saying that Jar Jar's secretly, like, the mastermind of the Force, mm-hmm. and all of his, like, mistakes that he makes are actually Force-driven, and he's, like, maybe a secret Sith Lord? Like, that's the book I'm ready to see.
I didn't watch all of it, but Lego Star Wars Rebuild the Galaxy, they had Darth Jar Jar in there, I believe was the big villain of the first series. So have done that. But yeah, I agree. That's the sort of thing that it should have been. And two of us have talked, so I think you're off the hook.
That's
here,
it.
Pete. Yeah.
Yep, Pete's cut.
You know, I'm sorry for what Ahmed has been through. You know, I don't want that.
But we have to take into account what you've been through as well.
No, I just, I'm not trying to say that. I don't want, you know, I'm sorry that, you know what I mean, for all of that. But I don't want to read this. I don't want this to be good. You know,
you don't want it to be good.
Interesting.
That's a hell of, I've never heard someone have that take.
I had to read this comic because you guys would make fun of me for not reading it. But I just was like, what are we doing? Like, what is
this steak dinner? I don't want it to be good. Not interested in it. to be good. I hope it's bad. I'm going to eat every bite. I hope it's bad.
I thought the art was good, but what are we doing? Like, what are you trying to do? You know what I mean? Like, either, I agree with Justin, either change his voice, change him so it can be something else, or let's just leave it where it happened and let's just move on, because this is just...
Well, I'll tell you what I think they're trying to do here is there has been a real retaking of the prequels in culture, particularly for people who were much younger and growing up with them, and they were their first Star Wars movies. So this is an attempt to take Jar Jar, a major character from that trilogy, and treat it seriously. Like, treat it as a character that can go on an adventure, that could be crucial to the Star Wars mythology. There's some key moments that happen here. There's the mother of a character that is very important to another character down the road who shows up here. That's a big deal. So, like, I don't know. This is obviously not for us who are old and cranky by the time the prequels came out, but for people who this was their original Star Wars trilogy, maybe this is fun, you know, like maybe this is what you want to see. And there is a lot of media. There's books and novels and stories and everything that are exploring these characters in different ways. So why not Jar Jar?
Why not Jar Jar? That should be the title.
There you go. The Crown, A Tale of Hell, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Todd Mignola, no relation, art by Warwick Johnson Cadwell.
Are you serious?
No, they're brothers. And this is about Hellboy's brothers in hell vying for the crown. It is crazy to me that Warwick Johnson Cadwell is not Mike Mignola based on the art. That's all I want to say.
Well, yes, but my take on this book, which I really enjoyed, this is like Hellboy via Adventure Time in a
good take.
Great
yes.
way. Like, I loved this. I thought the art really reflected that style. There's so much comedy happening here, while there's also so much, like, intrigue, very, like, Game of Thrones-style conversations through the lens of Adventure Time, which I thought was just so fun.
Yeah, I agree. This was awesome. Got some fun family drama here. Amazing art. Fun, weird story. Like the twists and turns. This is enjoyable.
Yeah, I think obviously they did a good job of capturing the world of Hellboy, but this is much more packed than your regular Hellboy story, and there's a lot more things going on. Like, it's not people just wandering through hell and going on esoteric adventures. It's still weird, but, like, it's much more straightforward at the same time. So if you have been like, about some of the Hellboy stuff, this is a good one to pick up for sure. Bleeding Hearts, number one from Vertigo, written by Dennis Camp, art by Stephen Morion. After The Nice House by the Sea was back last week, this is the first new title from the new Vertigo line, and it takes place in a world where zombies have taken over, and one of those zombies finds that his heart has started beating again. For the name Bleeding Hearts. Justin, you're going to camp. What'd you think about this one?
I love this book, and I feel like it's funny to me that this is like the first new Vertigo book, because it's such a Vertigo book, and it's deep in the pocket. Like, the writing is so fresh. All of the zombies have, like, physical description names that are meticulously used throughout. We're introduced to a world that is, like, a world we've seen of zombies, but in a totally different, conception. Really smartly drawn up from a writing point of view. But, man, the art is so, like, also fresh. It feels like something out of the, like, 70s influence, like Mad Magazine vibes, while you're still hitting a compelling story with some great zombie attacks and interesting a zombie whose heart starts beating in the midst of all of this. Great relationships. One of my just fave of the week.
Yeah, the art is really spectacular. To me, it kind of gives a little bit hints of, like, Keith David the Max a little bit. But it's just such a cool vibe. It really makes the whole thing fun. You really kind of want to see the world and spend time with it. Interesting characters, cool idea. You know, there's this rom-com that where it was, like, about zombies and then, like, these two zombies.
You talking about Warm Bodies?
Yep. Yeah, I am. Yeah, just a solid rom-com.
And just if you guys go back and listen, Pete brings up Warm Bodies in every single episode of the stack. He can't help it.
I mean, we're talking about zombie love. How can we not talk about Warm Bodies?
See, this immediately made me think of iZombie, which is a very different thing, but just based on the fact of being like a Vertigo book about zombies. I also really like that. It is interesting to me that they're essentially leading with yet another zombie book. And the other thing that I'm curious about is, what is Vertigo now? Because everything is Vertigo, kind of. Like, not across the board, but Image is Vertigo, and Boom is Vertigo, and Oni Press is, you know, they all have, like, their own little pockets, but what makes DC Vertigo different? And this is a really good book, but this is more just sort of big picture. I'm curious to see what happens once we get through the first month of the line. Now, granted, we've read two of the other books, so I have a little more of the shape of it, but I don't know. It's interesting. Like, it's a good start. Dennis Kemp is great. Stephen Morion's art is great, like we're saying. So I'd follow this book no matter what, but curious to see how Vertigo nets out after like the first month or two, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's exciting. But the problem is, it's like, it was so successful that it changed comic books. And you're right. Like, everybody is taken from the Vertigo kind of style a little bit. So what is this kind of new take on Vertigo? But I think this is an interesting start, and leading with art and kind of bringing that, like, I don't know, different grungy kind of, you know, takes on things, I think is an interesting start. And I agree, like, after a month, it'll be interesting to see, like, what it is and where it becomes. But it's an exciting time, I think. So I'll be interested to see how this goes. I'm rooting for it, for sure.
Yep, I think we all are. And here's another one all three of us are rooting for. Cyclops number one from Marvel, written by Alex Pachtadal, art by Roger Antonio. We had Alex on the show about a month back talking about this book. He was pretty hyped for it. It was a new miniseries that takes Cyclops, set in continuity. So he's leading the X-Men in Alaska. But in this issue, a rebuilt team of Reavers take him down. And we kind of already know what happens towards the end of the issue, but his visor cracks. So he's going to have to wander through the woods and fight the Reavers, even though he basically can't see, or at least can't open his eyes for fear of destroying everything around him. I'll just say, I thought this was a killer first issue. Yeah. Whether you like Cyclops or not, he is the level of badass I think he is in X-Men 97 was the first thing that I came to mind.
Oh, yes.
Where he's just doing, like, he's doing these moves that are like, that's cool. That is a cool thing he's doing. And I love the idea. There's a thing that Alex brings back here, where he's like, I could see, but I got brain damage when I was a kid.
Yes, and totally forgot that part.
That completely was out of mind, but it's something that he doesn't just bring back to explain it. It's something that he's playing with in this issue, both through the level of Cyclops' memory, what he remembers about his childhood, and also how his powers actually work. I thought this, plus, the new Reavers are gross, and I mean that in the best way. Like, I love the Reavers as a villain. They've made them real scary in this book, and so I'm very excited to see where this goes.
Same. I feel like this book really plusses up all of these ideas. Like, it had me enjoying the current X-Men continuity home base a little bit. It was drawn, and it feels sort of shitty to be stuck in Alaska in the middle of winter in a way that I was like, that explains a lot of why everything feels miserable in that book. Cyclops, we get into his backstory, we're reminded of it here, and it's like, everyone's like, he's such a Boy Scout. I'm like, his childhood was hell. Like, he's, like, there's a reason he has, you know, his hard edge and his dedication to, like, following the rules and all of that, because his life was very chaotic before that, protecting his brother, living in an orphanage, having this brain damage, like, crazy. And we get the emotional hit of that while he's maintaining a tough exterior. I feel like this book is going to take us on such a ride with him, an emotional ride, reflected by the very physical and cool action idea that he can't control his bursts, and the Reavers are extremely wreckable villains. Yeah. So let's do that.
And I just want to say one thing before Pete agrees with you and me, Justin.
Yeah, he's just nodding his head so hard.
It's going to roll straight off. It's nuts.
Don't hit your mic with your forehead, Pete, because you're nodding your head so hard.
One thing
hard.
We've talked about a little bit with this era of X-Men is the confusing nature of a lot of the new villains that they've introduced. And I appreciate them introducing new villains, but like... I don't know. Not a lot of them are working. Having Donald Pierce back, a character whose motivation is like, well, I hate mutants and I wish they were dead, so I built cyborgs to kill them, period. Like, and that's his whole plan. It's good. Like, it's nice and it's clean and it's understandable.
He's such a mad scientist, unabashedly. Yeah. He's like, well, I'll kill you, too, with my drill as I make you into a... And I was like, okay, I'm not worth it.
All of those, I mean, granted, this is when I was, like, in my prime reading X-Men, but all of those characters like Donald Pierce and Cameron Hodge and everybody who are like, I'm gonna kill you, X-Men! There's a level... I like that better. Like, I like that because that puts the X-Men in a position where, like, oh, whoa, back off, man! Versus these new visuals, they're like, we're just like you, and we want to do the same things, but like kind of in a fucked up way.
Alex, you're still in your prime. Oh, thanks, never say man. Otherwise.
Thank you.
Never say otherwise.
Thank you. And Pete, you were about to agree with that statement, I believe.
I'm not agreeing with anything that has been said. This is not my cup of tea. I would not go and spend money on this because I don't like Cyclops, and this doesn't make me think...
But you don't think this is a cool version of Cyclops? Like,
he's yelling at these kids, you know, and he's like, I want fucking soldiers. And it's like, dude.
Yeah, but that's not supposed to be good. Bro. Beast is very specifically like, what are you doing? Back off, man. Yeah, calm down. Don't do that. Like, that's the point of the book is he's going too far.
He's a dick and he sucks and he shouldn't be in charge.
It's an unrelated question. Has the Punisher ever said anything that you like don't quite agree with?
Sure.
Don't 100% get on board.
But you respect it.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing here, but
don't?
I mean, obviously I'm not going to like a Cyclops book, and I tried to read it. You know, just so Alex could torture me later, so I did.
It's
a dark path, Pete walks.
Sorry, I just want to clarify that last thing Pete said. I'm turning him into a Reaver later. So
Yeah. A Reaver who loves Cyclops.
Yep. Keep your flesh tight, because it's Reaver time. The Center Holds, number one from Boom Studios, written by Larry Hama, art by M.D. Doc Bright. This is a new superhero book by Larry Hama and the unfortunately late M.D. Doc Bright, who passed away. This was something that they were working on for a very, very long time together, and then fortunately Bright passed on. But they are finally getting it out anyway, so that everybody could see his art. What'd you guys think about this one?
I mean, the art is great. There's a lot to this. You could tell this was like thought about. There's a lot of kind of depth to these characters. There's a lot going on here. It's such a interesting kind of take on so-called heroes. So yeah, I appreciate that they put this out, you know, post-mortem, but it is great art.
Pete, you're sort of our MC Hama, so thank you for that review. I feel like I think the art in here is great. It has such a and the writing has such a match to the art. It's such a sort of old school vibe. Undercutting superheroics in the way that Watchmen did. Not quite with as much of an impact, I would say, so far, but. But I do like this. I wish the title was something, was different words.
It's just not descriptive of what's going on.
The Center Holds is such a like, huh?
There's a lot going on in this issue, and there are bits that I liked and heroes I liked. It does feel like it's so many ideas that are packed in here. It's hard to focus on any particular one. People have done it before, but it is tough to introduce an entire new superhero world in one issue, and I just don't think that's the modern way that we do things. I wish pace-wise they had focused in on one character and explored it from there, but That's not the book we got, so there you go. Sirens, Love Hurts, number one from DC Comics, written by Teenie Howard, art by Bab Starr. This has been described as long Halloween for the girlies. I believe Teenie Howard said that at the New York Comic Con panel. It is a four-issue series that focuses on Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, and Catwoman, and Black Canary, all begrudgingly teaming up to solve a murder while also dealing with the upcoming wedding of Green Arrow and Black Canary. There's also clearly elements of Sex and the City in here, as these four characters go to brunch for most of the first half of the issue before they get into costume and head to a concert and solve some crimes in the second half of the issue. I thought this was a lot of fun. The characterizations are really enjoyable. More than anything, Bab Starr's costumes, I think, are great. She gives everybody such specific looks in every single scene, from like just the out-on-the-town fashion, which is very specific, to Poison Ivy's costume is really cool and very different from the costume that she has in current continuity. Again, this is working off of what Bab Starr said on that panel, but she was like, we want to do something for cosplayers and give cosplayers as much stuff to wear as humanly possible.
Oh, wow.
And I think that really comes through in the art in a fun way. Yeah. And yeah, they're just having a good time with this book.
Yeah, I agree. The tone, the vibe, and just the feel of this book is great. It's very funny to me when they all meet up. They're like, oh, what are you doing here? I was like, you guys see each other constantly in this universe. How are you surprised to be bumping into each other for a slightly aggressive mission that they go on? There's a little bit of a mystery here, but it's such a just having this art here, such a refresh on the sort of usual way we see these characters. So that's cool.
Yeah, this is fun. Art's great. Yeah, I kind of feel for Black Canary in this. She's sacrificing a lot to kind of hang out with the cool kids a little bit. But yeah, I'm interested to see where this is going to go and fun villain reveal there at the end. So, yeah.
I do want to just throw out on the costume front, it's relatively minor things, but also the way Bab Starr draws the dudes, specifically Green Arrow, who's just like, I'm just a bro hanging out backstage. But the one that really struck me was Calendar Man. He comes into the club and he's wearing like sort of like a very nicely fitting shirt, and he looks good when usually he's like, I'm the dirtiest guy in Arkham with my weird head tattoo.
Yeah, he's usually naked or like wearing a rag around his torso, and he's like, it's January! And they're like, okay, okay. Yeah.
Calendar so man. I like that. Just I like creating this world where it's like, oh, wow, everybody looks pretty good. So there you go. Mark Spector, Moon Knight, number one from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Dev Balya Promenek. In this first issue, Mark Spector has been captured by a bunch of villains who are trying to break him using fear gas. Can you break Moon Knight?
Man. Oh,
I don't think you can.
I don't think so. This guy's brain is crazy.
Yeah.
I think is the point we're getting at here.
I'll speak for myself. I have been a little back and forth on a lot of Jed McKay's Moon Knight run. It keeps starting at intriguing places and then losing me as it goes on. This one, though, was the strongest start I thought so far. Like, agreed. I thought this was like a killer first issue where I'm not a big Moon Knight fan, but there were several awesome moments where I was like, hell yeah, okay, here we go, that were just really fun. It's this mix of Jeff Lemire's brain-bending stuff that he brought to Moon Knight with just some killer Moon Knight action stuff at the same time. Some great mixed media art from Dev Balya Promenek as well that I won't necessarily spoil, but I'm sure somebody else will. I just thought this was a really fun issue.
Yeah, I agree. Plus a cool cover. Yeah, it was fun to kind of see
the cover, Mark, by the way, is Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Perfect idea for number one.
Yeah, great I choice. Think it's a cool kind of like pose and great art, the light and all this, the shading. It's really well done. Anyways, yeah, I like this kind of take on Mark, the kind of low man on the totem pole. He's in the mail room and you got the evil boss. So, yeah, I mean, we've all been there. But yeah, love the last panel. The art style is creepy in all the right ways for this story. It really brings such a cool vibe to it. I love this first issue. I think they did a great job of getting excited for more.
What do you think of this new, on the last page, his costume being like sort of loose black pants, no shirt, and white gloves? fun little into it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, definitely.
That's like what a Pete, Chippendales.
That's what night. Pete wears to work.
Yeah, exactly. That's my everyday.
Yeah, when he says Constructicons form of Devastator.
Form Devastator?
Form Devastator, that's what happens.
I mean, that team up last panel is just so badass. I mean, if you want to try to take shots at the fashion aspects of it, I think you're missing the point, but okay.
My bigger question is, I'm getting back to what I said earlier about, like, wow, his runs start really long, strong with a strong idea, and then waver from there. We ended a totally different place than where we started at the beginning of this issue, so I'm very curious what the overall story is, because it is the sort of brain-bending thing that I think could have powered 6 issues, potentially 12 issues, even something like that, as they got deeper and deeper. But instead, it feels like they're ditching the conceit here at the end of the first issue. But maybe they're not. I guess I'm sorry.
I just, you guys are, you know, taking shots at me for liking this cover. Is this not how you guys sleep at night? Because this is, you know, before I go to bed, this is exactly
what
you're
doing. I sleep my arms crossed with my Alex symbols in each head.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What are those? They're just strong A's?
Yeah, they're big A's.
Nice. Big A's. Hey, what weapons do you sleep with in your hands?
You know nunchucks? This. Yes.
Do you have one nunchuck between two hands or one nunchuck in each hand?
What?
And when you're sleeping, when you're sleeping with nunchucks, you never strangle yourself in the middle of the night, or you always strangle yourself in the middle of the night?
Here's the thing about my night chucks, as I like to say, my cozy chucks, is it screws into like a staff, so I don't have loose kind of chains hanging out. You know what I mean? Like it's all screwed in, ready to go.
So you're sleeping with a bow staff in your hand?
That's right.
That feels also complicated. Do you not turn over?
No, man, I sleep just like this.
I sleep holding my ant farm of bed bugs.
Oh, that's a horrible
idea. Welcome to Brooklyn, am I right?
Oh, yikes.
Geiger, number 21 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Gary Frank. In this issue, Geiger is teaming up with the Northerner, and ooh, they got a Nazi tank they got to drive across America. But there is a lot of big mythology stuff for this whole universe that's getting laid out here that I thought was very interesting in this issue. Well, what do you guys think? How are you feeling? Are you blowing up on Geiger? Are you glowing?
I love Geiger. I think it's a great comic. The Time Machine tank is weird for me. I know tanks are super popular and stuff right now, but
what? What do you mean?
There's a tank movie. There's like Ghost Tank. There's a bunch of tanks.
Part of the media are you consuming? You're on Tank Talk? Are you on Tank Talk?
Yeah, I'm all over
what
Tank Talk.
What tank movie?
It's a movie called Tank.
I got it.
About a tank girl. From the mid-90s.
There's also Tank Girl.
All right, you might totally be right. I've just never heard of this movie. I think the tank thing is probably Jeff Johns riffing on the haunted tank because he's already got G.I. Robot is, what's his name, Metal Joe, the guy. guy that he has that's G.I. Robot in this universe.
Yeah, it's Joe.
Yes.
Junkyard Joe.
Junkyard Joe. Yeah. So anyway, the tank is, you know, them doing that.
Hold on, I'm just looking up tank movie. Oh, there was a movie called The Tank from 2025.
Thank you.
A German movie, Pete.
Yeah?
Are you plugged into German tank movies?
German Tank Talk?
I mean,
German Tank Talk?
I saw it advertised. I was aware of it. It was
what,
in my...
When you were summering in Berlin? What happened?
No, I don't summer.
Yeah,
in Berlin.
You know, you don't have to go to Berlin to travel back in time and kill baby Hitler. You could be anywhere and then go there.
Pete goes there just in case. That's when the time machine gets
him. That's why I hope that by going there, I can get some kind of time rip.
Let me ask you a question. What would you do if baby Hitler came forward into the future to kill you?
Oh, I'm ready for it. That's why I sleep with my nunchucks, dude. I'm ready all
think
the
how,
time.
Think how fucked up you have to be if baby Hitler's coming to kill you.
Bring it.
Oh, boy.
That's such a funny idea. I like this issue. I like that Geiger's doing some different stuff. So that's cool. It changes up the vibe of this. What do you guys feel about August 36th as a date?
Mysteries.
We get a full page of a calendar.
Here's the thing. I don't think we need more August. That's what I would say.
Wow.
We already have too much
on August.
But the last day of August is my wedding anniversary, so I like that. But by that point, I'm ready for September. Like, let's go through...
In the future, there's more days in the month. That's crazy.
September. I'm trying to get to fall. There's better weather then. End of August?
August. Real vacation month, though. Really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not for this guy. I'm always working. Aquaman, number 14 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Daniel Bayliss. This is a DC KO tie-in.
Is it?
Question mark.
Is it, Alex?
Great question. As there's a battle for control of the seas, and there's a change of power.
The avatar of the blue.
There is a change in the hierarchy of power in the ocean.
Yeah.
You sound like you're struggling to read a press release that you got.
I don't know. Aquaman's not my thing. What do you guys think? You're Aquaheads.
You don't like Aquaman in general?
This is not fair. So I try not to talk about this too much, but like as soon as they go under the sea, there's something in my head that I'm like, come on.
You hate being under the sea.
I don't have a problem with people flying through the air or flying through space, but as soon as they're under the ocean, it's just not. I don't know why. I can't explain why it's not interesting to me.
Holy shit, have you tried swimming? You're going to hate it.
No, yeah, I like swimming. I just don't
that
like...
That doesn't make sense.
Where they're like, wow, it's just like the land, but also there's water. Maybe that's the problem, is that like, as a comic, that makes no difference to me. You could be sure, like, take the blue away, and it's exactly the same thing as on land in a fantasy story.
I mean, what? Sort of. They
not
fly
at all.
Yeah. They fly through the
I'm
heavy
serious.
Air.
Like,
completely
yes.
different people.
There have been stories that deal with actual under the sea stuff or things about the sea, but most of the time it's exactly the same thing. Where it's like we have a bunch of kingdoms under the sea. Everybody's fighting the kingdoms. Aquaman is the king, but we don't want him to be the king anymore. Let's see what happens. Maybe there's going to be a shakeup with the king. And that's the other part is like, I don't love kings as characters in comic books because I'm like, you have other things to be doing right now than being a superhero, right? Like, or fighting whales or whatever you're doing. Like, you have a job. You have stuff you need to be doing.
That's every character, not just
it's very specifically
you know,
kings.
Character.
Like, whenever they get to king characters, I'm like, you got to do that. The only one that has it right is Doctor Doom. He's the only monarch because he is like, I'm trying to deal with a whole lot of area right now.
Yeah,
plus,
really
I got to kill
his,
this accursed Richards. How do
you
I
feel
balance
for his
things?
Management?
I don't understand how your brain works.
GeoForce, get out of here.
But you
he
like Namor.
I do.
He's literally the same thing.
Except here's the thing. Most of the time with Namor, though, Namor is like, something is happening here, and I got to come out of the sea and kick your ass, and now I have to go back to the sea. All right?
Oh, I see. You want your kings to be in a bad mood. Like,
well,
you don't like the Aquaman.
They got to do their king thing. They don't have time for all of this.
So he just dipped into
Muppet.
Interesting. He's Beaker, actually.
Yeah.
What a twist.
Me, 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 me.
I will say, so this story feels like Jeremy Adams is like, I don't care about DCKO. I'm going to continue my fun under the sea story. And like, I like the mirror of it all and the power play between her and her mom. But it really came alive to me the last like five pages when Aquaman does come back. The confrontation between him and Adriana, Mir's mom, I thought was great. And she sort of has taken his power, because Aquaman's been sort of zooted up with his control of the blue.
Yeah.
And we get that flipped here. And then we get a last page that I thought was really interesting. So
I
don't
know.
I thought this ended
strong. I agree with that. I thought the ending was very strong. When they were on the land, and then the last page
when they were on
the
land.
I like that.
And they were on the land. It is true. They only the last end of it. They're like, let's bring this up to the surface. And Alex is like, hell
yeah. And the last page when I was like, now he's a little kid again. He doesn't have to be a king. That's going to be so much less complicated.
Really feeling the stress. That's such a Pete take you have there.
No, I know. Like, that's why I don't like to mention it. It's bad. It's a bad take. It doesn't make it.
All right. Well, at least you know. You know
not
I mean?
That all Pete takes are bad, but. But fill in the blank. Yeah, I thought you were going to pick up. Yeah, we're over to Pete with another take.
Yeah, I like this. I thought they, you know, the evil, creepy mom who kills off your husband. I mean, that's always going to be an issue. You know what I mean? So, you know, it just was, I was just like, you can't do this. Aquaman's in the middle of a very important tournament right now. And it's,
pulled him
it's
out.
Kind of, yeah. So I was a little shocked by that. Which I think was fun. But yeah, also really enjoyed the art, and I don't hate Aquaman.
Wade Wilson, Deadpool, number one from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Jeff Shaw. In this issue, we're getting what I thought was going to be a more serious take on Deadpool. It isn't really.
No.
Nope. But he is bummed out about something that happened to his daughter that we're going to find out about later. And he is trying to die as hard as he can. Unfortunately, his body and his powers won't let him die. So he's just getting hurt horribly and then coming back from it. But what this actually is a back-to-basics approach where he is a mercenary again. He's working for Hammerhead. He's living with Blind Al. He's not doing quite as much winking and looking at the camera, though there's plenty of jokes and meta-jokes anyway. What'd you guys think about this issue?
Well, it started off pretty sad and crazy, but ends up with some hope, so that's always nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next issue to kind of see how this is all going to kind of like once it kind of hits a groove. But yeah, I love the art. It seems like an interesting kind of take on Deadpool. The art style has a silliness and a madness to it, which I think works really well for this comic. So yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to happen.
I like when Deadpool's a little depowered. I think he's a little over the watching him just kill and die like for 15 pages. Mm-hmm. I was like, I definitely don't need to see more of that. The Deadpool Wolverine movie got me fully tanked on that. That's why tanks are really popular right now, I heard. So that's when I was fully tanked.
Did you see there was a movie in Berlin in 2025 called Tank?
No.
Really good.
Pete loves, I mean, Pete does love vehicles. So I guess it makes sense he loves a movie called The Tank.
Yeah. Would you say he's in the tank for them?
Yeah, Pete's in the tank for the tank. He's Pete the Tank LePage. But I will say the sort of early edition, CBS's early edition idea that happens at the end of this issue. Shouts to my octogenarians out at the retirement home who like early aughts, vaguely Christian television.
Well, that was 2000s, wasn't it? Early edition?
Was it? That's what I said, early aughts.
Oh, early aughts. Okay.
It was. I actually thought I was wrong about that, but that's a TV show about a guy who gets the newspaper one day early. And he's like, imagine doing that today. Yeah.
He gets his email one worse. Day early. was that like Ron Livingston or something, or just a guy who looks like Ron Livingston?
Yes, it was a more like regular milquetoasty Ron Livingston, I believe.
Okay, but it's a cat who brings up the newspaper.
I think the cat ended up being, and it was sort of like a religious thing.
Yeah, the cat is God.
Somehow, yeah. I was like, I can't believe I know this. Stupid brain.
We know a lot of stupid details about brain. Early edition, unfortunately. Yes,
I do like the idea of that for Deadpool. That's when I thought this really came alive in the last like 5 or 6 pages.
Okay. Next up, Babs, The Black Road South, number 2 from Ahoy Comics, written by Garth Ennis, art by Jason Burroughs. Last issue, Babs and Izzy got real wasted and lost a ton of money, and now they are on the pursuit of that money into this fantasy world's version of Mordor. And of course, because of that, we are getting a bunch of hobbits in this issue. Now, the last issue I was a little critical of. I enjoyed it generally, but it felt like it was not quite as satirically sharp as the first Bab series. I would frankly say that continues in this issue, but also it goes back to the old Garth Ennis. And I'll just spoil the last page. which is a hobbit who is Sam, right? It's the Sam yep. Hobbit, who Frodo wanted Sam to suck his dick. And then Frodo got knocked into Mount Doom. And now Sam...
By Babs.
Yeah, by Babs. And now Sam is dressing in a tiny little gimp suit and wants to kill Babs. And I was like, all right, sure. This is fine. This is not what I liked about the first series. But yes, this is a Garth Ennis comic, so I get it.
Well, and it's interesting you don't like this because I feel like there's more premise to this miniseries. There's more like we have this very particular thing we're doing. But it's also more sketchy. It's more like sketch comedy-y. Mm-hmm. Like, we get that set up, which I thought was fun and funny. We get some, like, Fellowship of the Ring roasts. We get, like, a dragon. We get a dragon sort of, like, cancel culture take. But I like that part. Like, I think it's a different type of story.
Yeah. It's fun to see Garth having a good time here. I agree with the Zalbatron a little bit where I felt like he hit in the last arc kind of hit a little bit more of a fun comedic groove. But I think this is just kind of it's fun to see him having a good time. So, you know, if this isn't my cup of tea, I'll keep reading until it is. So, yeah.
that's how you treat tea.
What is your cup of tea? It's just raccoon shit and hot water? Is that what we're talking about?
No, I like a nice green tea.
Oh, do you?
Green tea.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah. Loves his antioxidants.
Justin, you a tea guy?
No. Black coffee's my tea.
Yeah.
I love a black tea, too.
I'll have a black vanilla or something like that. But
black vanilla, of course, it has to be
But I won't choose tea. I would prefer not to have tea if I don't have to.
You won't choose tea? Oh, I thought you were in like, you choose...
No. I don't know. Definitely not an herbal tea or anything like that. All right. Batman and Robin, number 30 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Fico Osseo. This is the final issue of Philip Kennedy Johnson's run on the title, and we talked to him earlier this week on a bonus podcast, so go listen to that. No spoilers there for the issue, but we can get into spoilers here as they wrap up multiple fights with Penguin, Scarface, and a bunch of other folks who are running riot in Gotham. Justin, I think you love this one.
I love this. The great use of Penguin and Scarface. I love seeing Scarface is such a funny villain, funny rogues member for Batman. But the real star here is Damian. I feel like, what a come up. I feel like Damian grows up in Philip Kennedy Johnson's run, and especially in this issue. And that's such a nice thing to have happen. Like, I think the timing is perfect. I feel like we've done enough of the, like, bratty kid who's like, should I kill him? I don't know. I used to do that. That version of Damian, I'm ready to move on from. And between this and having Matt Fraction on the live show and the stuff he's doing on his Batman run is similar, like changing who Damian is because it's time. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, if I may, I have a prepared statement I'd like to read.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Alex, I just want to start by saying I'm constantly impressed with how you curate a stack. I think you do an amazing job crafting this list. Hopefully someday someone studies it and congratulates you on the craftsmanship and admires and breaks down your choices and can really get an insight to who you are as a person. All that being said, why is this here? Why is this comic so far down on this list? This is just, I mean, are you not moved?
Do you not have a heart?
This is an unbelievable comic. I was very touched and moved by this.
Thank you so much. I have a prepared statement as well. Thank you so much for your statement, Pete. I respect and enjoy your words. They are well thought out. And now I'm going to go back to the first title in the stack and explain all of my individual choices leading up to this.
Oh, great.
I
would love this insight.
I have an unprepared statement.
Yes.
Oops, what? Oh. These guys are weird. Okay, here we go.
Okay, DCKO number 4. That, no, I'm not going to do this. Why do you bring this up all the time? Who cares?
Here's the thing I love about the stack is we get to talk about all of the books.
Yes, well, two of us get to talk about them.
Yes.
No.
And I didn't get to talk about this one, so there you go.
Well, truly, well, this, we did talk about this book so much with Philip Kennedy.
Yes, we did. This is a great book. Yeah, congrats to Little Philly on finishing this off. And
Little Philly? That's insulting.
Ficas. Ficas
is on. I think this is a great kind of end to such a great arc and really nice send-off. I was very touched and moved by it. Great.
Planet She-Hulk, number 4 from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Emilio Lasso, in this issue, Jack of Hearts is back, and he has been brainwashed by the folks who want him to fight She-Hulk, his former lover. Meanwhile, there is a trial going on for a dude that She-Hulk helped, who has been accused of murder, ending in a big twist by the end of the issue. I really like the series. I'm really enjoying it. It really gets to the heart of She-Hulk. Great character, great characterization throughout. And I love the use of Jack of Hearts in here. That relationship was so good in the last run on She-Hulk. So I was very happy to see it back and happy to see how they play around with it.
Yeah, I love the twist at the end. I have such a good time with She-Hulk in this kind of planet Hulk.
Because you visited her for a while there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I just think it's such a great use of She-Hulk. There's just the art's unbelievable. The action is fantastic. This is just a blast and a half, and also just kind of such a cool thing to bring back Jack in this way. So I can't wait to see how this all kind of unfolds. But again, the art is just so badass, and I'm really enjoying this.
I love this as well. I thought this was great to bring in the relationship and have it be her problem. I like her and her bud have such a breakout couple of scenes where they're talking about what it's like to like have emotions, but also go through a bunch of shit and how it makes it different. And then the twist at the ending, the art's great. So much giant sword stuff, a lot of reflections. Who needs a mirror when you can check your look in a giant sword?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Devil on My Shoulder, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Piotr Kowalski. We've been following a woman who is brutally tortured by a bunch of dudes and has spent the intervening years hunting them down. This issue, she hunts even more of them down in brutal ways. Pete, you're pumping your fist because you love brutality and you love watching people die in real life and in comics. Take it away.
Nope. Just comics, but thank you for trying.
If anybody's not watching on video, there's an entire wall of Faces of Death VHSs behind Pete right now.
Yeah, those are hard to track down. Also, does one of us run a trivia section that is obsessed with dead people? Any of us here?
I don't think so.
That would be weird.
That would be weird. If that was, that would be super in the show, we should probably cut it out.
We should get a look at Devil, that. We should get off our my eyes shoulder. On that. We should get our eyes on that.
Great ish alert. This is just such a... This has been, like, hard for me because it's really scary and dark, but I was able to enjoy this issue. Tons of action. Love the main character's kind of drive, and this is just a badass comic, and I was really enjoying the revenge area of this, so... it was nice to have something that I could read and enjoy and not be too scared of.
It really lives in the revenge area, I would argue. Yeah, it's great, bloody. I like the, especially the scam that our main character runs on the badass bodyguard dude who gets very hastily. That's basically a Frank Castle person, and he gets wrecked pretty fast. This story is dark, but each issue sort of honors the horror that we went through in the first issue in a great way by giving us the catharsis of murder.
Supergirl, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Sophie Campbell, art by Joe Quinones. In this issue, Supergirl has been tricked by some pink kryptonite into dating who she thinks is her crush. Meanwhile, Lita Luthor is trying to help her out and track her down. What'd you guys think about this one?
The Joe Quinones art is awesome here. The tone of this book is very different from any of the other comics here in the stack that has like romance angle meets superhero. It feels like, a more superhero focused Riverdale or something like that. So that's a nice, shakeup. in this deck.
Yeah, cool, great art. Just love the style of this. You know, Subaru almost falling for the kind of pink kryptonite trap, but her friends save her. Fun team book. I like the friend angle for Supergirl. I think that's great. And yeah, I'm enjoying this comic.
And last but not least, Venom 254 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Carlos Gomez. In this issue, Venom and Mary Jane go toe-to-toe with Madame Mask, who is in some giant power armor. I thought, as usual, this was a ton of fun. There's just so many really enjoyable moments throughout this fight. Madame Mask really coming for Venom, a surprise reveal about the characters we thought, some characters we thought were dead. And I love, maybe they've done this in previous issues, but maybe not as explicitly, the way that Mary Jane exists inside the Venom suit. They keep cutting to these black panels where she's just kind of hanging there. And I was like, oh, yeah, I never really thought about that. And that leads to this really fun moment where she's being held face down by Madame Mask. And she's like, oh, God, I can't turn around. And Venom's like, I made a goo, I can turn around.
Anybody can turn around.
What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So they continue to find fun ways of iterating Venom in this series. I'm just having a blast reading this book.
Same. And that's why if I ever meet the bastard who put this at the bottom of the stack, I'll kill him. That's my devil on my shoulder. Is that motherfucker.
Good thing we don't know who it is.
Yeah, exactly. God, yeah, I think, fortunately, I heard a cat leaves this on your doorstep every week, right, Alex?
Yeah.
That's what you said.
Oh, yeah, wow. I actually get the stack on Tuesdays.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's
crazy.
Early edition. And what, that's what you're doing with it, is just having us talk about it on Wednesdays?
Yep.
Interesting. In the TV show, wow. Early edition, he saves people's lives.
Yeah. No, I'm just having you guys do it again. I know, but you're hitting your lines. It's mostly for my purposes, because otherwise, like, I'd be totally off script here.
We're Olympians in a lot of ways. I thought this was fantastic. I love every issue, especially the physicality stuff you're talking about. At one point, Mary Jane gets knocked out for a second, and Venom's like, hey, hello, knock, knock. Are you okay in there? I was like, that's such a cute relationship they have.
Yeah, I'm surprising how much I'm enjoying MJ as Venom. I think it's such a, at first I was like, what the fuck are we doing? But really impressed with how this is working out and the kind of tone of it. It brings in a newness to Venom, which is great. Also, there's a moment early in the comic where they're just talking. They just kind of remark that it's a warm spring day. And I'm like, God damn, I hope I make it, because it is fucking cold as fuck outside and I am sick of it. But yeah, this is just such a great comic. So well done. Fun last panel reveal. This is a blast. Yeah.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
And be sure to order our raccoon shit cookbook called Trash Pandas, coming soon from Comic Book Club Press.
Delicious. Of the